gonna take a lot of love to change the way things are. It's gonna take a lot of love.
Kia ora tātou, nā mai haere mai ki te Caravan of Hope. Welcome to the Caravan of Hope with me, Brent Caldwell.
And me, COVID O'Matic.
Coming to you live from Dunedin, Otiputi, here in the South Island of Aotearoa, New Zealand. Today is Wednesday, the 3rd of April, and this is episode 19 of our podcast. 19 episodes, how about that?
That's pretty, it's amazing, and it's also very sad that we're still having to make it when really this should have been stopped months ago.
Yes, I guess what we're trying to do is do ourselves out of a podcast. So today we have a very special guest who's going to be joining us. That's Katrina Mitchell-Kitab, who's going to be speaking to us from the North Island, or Te Ika a Māui of New Zealand. And she's going to tell us a wee bit about her background, her family, and her understanding of what's happening in Gaza. But before we do that, we want to touch on a few things. We want to talk about the march last weekend.
Yeah.
Want to talk about an interesting YouTube talk that you were listening to the other day, COVID-O, and just round that off by talking about a couple of community events.
Yeah.
So tell us about the march on Saturday.
The march on Saturday, there's still not a huge number of people going, unfortunately, but there's still a good solid crew there, and a number of speakers speaking from different kind of perspectives, and I still, my Tamimi talked and said, you know, even though it's Ramadan and they're fasting, she wanted to be there because she just so values the support from people and the love that people give her, because it's, you know, they must feel, we feel helpless, but if you've got relatives in Palestine and in Gaza and in Israel, you must be feeling distraught. You know, that's not even a word big enough for it. So any support we can give to these people, to Palestinians.
So there'll be a march coming up on Saturday the 6th?
On Saturday, yeah.
Okay. So we look forward to having as many of you down there as possible. And even if it's just, okay, you don't have to go every week, but if you could get there once, it's amazing how much you can learn and the people that you meet, because there are lots of people here in our city and in yours, wherever you are in the world, wherever you are in Aotearoa, New Zealand. You will know that there are like-minded human beings who are wanting to press for change and to save lives. That's really where we're at the moment, because we're now 6 months almost into this situation, and we're over 30,000 people have lost their lives, and countless others' lives have been changed forever. And not forgetting the situation with all the hostages who are being held and the 1,400 people who lost their lives on the 7th of October. It's catastrophic for all involved, and the sooner we can bring it to an end, the better. So we've had a march, and you watched an interesting YouTube documentary.
Yes, this was by a chap called Elan Pape, who is a professor at Exeter University in England. He is Jewish, son of German immigrants, I think, was born in Haifa in Israel, and became very interested in the Palestinian history, but also what the Israeli official history of what happened since 1948, and he sort of rewrote that, got an incredible amount of flak from the Israeli government, and eventually had to leave Israel. Was sort of dismissed from his post, I believe. And the talk is actually, the Zionist Project is
coming to an end.
Coming to an end.
Yeah.
And his thought behind that, I mean, it's a fascinating thing, because he knows so much of what's happened in the history, and he's in contact daily with people in Gaza, in Israel and Palestine. So he's right up there, so he can actually feel what the political situation is within Israel, which we don't often get from an outsider's perspective. But the line that stuck with me was, he said, well, Israel is actually founded on the basis of providing a safe place for Jewish people. And he said, at the moment, the most unsafe place in the world for Jewish people is Israel. So he says they're kind of failing, and you know the government is just sort of falling apart, really.
And just speaking of that, I've noticed in the news coverage in the last day or two the surging numbers of people in protesting in Israel itself. Up until now, the hostage families haven't wanted to align themselves with the anti-war faction. But just in the last 7 days, the protests that are happening there have seen the combining of those forces, and we're getting up to numbers on the streets which far exceed the numbers that were gathering before October 7th, protesting the changes to the Supreme Court in Israel. So slowly but surely, pressure is growing. And I guess the thing for anyone who's watching this podcast or listening to it, wherever you may be, wherever you are in the world, is that there are things that you can do.
And one of those things that Ilan Pappe was saying, he says, he gives a sort of pessimistic view of the next year or so. He says, because of Israel's accumulated weapons and still being supported basically by the United States, he doesn't think much is going to change. But he says what's important, and he's looked historically, is that accumulation of pressure. And one of the things he said is very important is this thing BDS, which is the boycotting, disinvesting, and is things about countries. They're making some kind of stopping.
And Katrina, our guest, is probably going to talk to us about the app No Thanks, which you can download from the App Store, which helps you see where your products are coming from.
Because, as they said, you know, one of the big things was actually the boycott against South Africa was one of the big things that eventually turned it around.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you know, it's often economic pressure that makes people actually change.
Yeah. So I'm just downloading that app as we speak.
It's something that we can do.
Yeah. Okay, and other things you can do are to use your talent or use your skill or your connections to raise awareness or even raise funds. I think we're going to talk to Katrina about how difficult it is for people to make a crossing out of Egypt, out of Israel into Egypt, and the amount of money that's required. So around the world, lots of people are raising funds by doing benefit concerts or events, and there's two events coming up quite soon here in Dunedin.
Should also talk about that actually there was a specific event, I think, for raising money to try and bring somebody out of Gaza. And that was a exhibition that was held at the Tattoo Agency, which local artists donated their works, and it raised a lot of money. And there was also a concert, which was in McAndrew Bay, which also, I think, believe raised money for the same thing. There are two events coming up, one of which is the at the Crown Hotel.
Beats for Peace.
Yeah.
And that's at the Crown Hotel this Saturday.
Saturday the 6th.
Saturday the 6th. And
I think it's at 9:30. Did we have a...
Oh, I'll put the details up on our Facebook page. Yeah. And we've also got our local comedians getting in behind fundraising.
Right, and that's next Thursday, which is the 11th.
Of April, and that's at The Dish in Stafford Street.
What time was that at?
No idea.
I think we had it on the screen, but... hold on. Here we go. I've got it here.
Right, we're going
to... 7:30 to 9:30.
7:30 till 9:30 at The Dish.
And some local comedians such as...
Ruben Crisp.
Finn Mott, Demelza Daisy Ray, John Falconer, Amit Paradkar, and Harriet Moyer. Okay. So please go along and support that.
So that's at The Dish in Stafford Street. So get in and support that worthy cause. So shall we introduce our special guest?
So, nau mai, haere mai, ki te Caravan of Hope, and welcome to our very special guest today, Katrina Mitchell-Kutab. Welcome, Katrina.
Kia ora. Thank you so much, both of you, for having me.
We have come in contact with you through a mutual friend of ours who has been a guest on the show, Rula Youssef, and she suggested that you would be a great person for us to speak to because of your family's connections, your background, particularly with Gaza and Israel. So I'll let Kovido say hello. I have this really bad habit of never letting him get a word in. It's amazing. But so I'm wondering whether if we, when we think of, our pepeha, we always talk about, where we're from, what our mountain, what our river is, and here in Aotearoa, New Zealand. But I'm just wondering, just to give some context, whether you might just talk about a wee bit about where you're from, where your family is, and what your current situation is.
My mother's side of the family is from Katamon in Jerusalem. It's probably one of the very few places in now what is now known as Israel that they haven't changed the name of the area. And they're also in other parts of Palestine, so in the occupied West Bank and East Jerusalem. So my heart is very much in Palestine with family still there. And I guess wherever you're from, you have a love for your topography. So whether I step out and smell the dust or look at the trees or listen to the voices, I just feel very much at home. But my father's side is from the UK. So I also grew up in England, which in terms of Palestine is quite a contradictory kind of marriage. But there are amazing people in the UK, as you can see, standing up marching now. So, it's really important on all sides, including in Israel, that we don't demonize everybody from a particular country, which is exactly what's happening in Gaza with this collective punishment. So England also holds my heart, its topography, its history, its beautiful buildings. And I am now here in Aotearoa, so in New Zealand, came over here after living in Australia. So I've lived all over. In the early 2000s, I met a New Zealander, was captured through pregnancy, and have ended up staying. We have been back and forth from New Zealand. So I'm now in the lower North Island.
So if we were to sort of say, who your people are, what would you say?
I guess being a half-half person, my family is an extended family in very many different countries, which I think is really important in today's day and age, that my family is all over. And you mentioned Rula. Rula is Muslim. My family is Christian, and I consider her a sister. So, I have very strong ties with both. All places that I've lived in. I love France. I lived in France for a while, but Palestine and England is where my soul soars and where I want to die or have my ashes thrown, not blown up, but thrown.
And I guess that's an interesting point that you make, that as global citizens, political lines are just drawn on a map. The land is important, and and you've lived in a number of places, so you've got a very strong, I'm making an assumption, but having done a bit the same myself, having lived in quite a few places, you develop an awareness of what's a great way to live and what's the right way to live and how it's great to be treated.
Yes, and also, not judging people too quickly, because when you live in a lot of countries, especially third world countries, we and even myself, I have stereotypical views of people, and they are challenged considerably when you go to live overseas, and you realize how history is written, how politics wants you to believe certain things, and it's really important to get out of your country and travel for everybody so that you appreciate where you're from, but you also appreciate the multicultural community that surrounds you, because every single country in the world nearly is surrounded by a multicultural community. And we need to respect and understand and educate ourselves so that our neighbors and us ourselves live a really fruitful life.
How realistic is that given the way the world is structured at the moment? And if we take the situation in Gaza as an example of that, one of the reasons this podcast began was because we wanted to speak with people who are living the real experience, because the information we get, well, you watch our New Zealand news, Gaza might get 90 seconds, it might get 2 minutes. But it in no way tells people what the lived experience of people on the ground is. And I'm wondering whether you could maybe talk about what you know and understand are the current conditions for people on the ground.
Well, I mean, this is I think we're actually living through a revolution. I think people need to wake up to the fact that we don't get enough media here, but all over the world, the demonstrations are growing. They're not getting smaller. And the demonstrations are standing up for equality, for humanity, for complete disregard and disrespect of the rules-based order, which was created by the West on the ashes of the Holocaust for and never again. And we do, I would like to make it really clear here that Israel and Zionism does not represent Judaism. So when I'm talking about Israel and I'm talking about Zionism, I'm not talking about Judaism. I have wonderful ties with the Jewish community, most of the Jewish community, including Rick Sahar, who actually last week we were on the steps of Parliament, which our media did not cover in the evening. And we had Phil Twyford, who is the opposition foreign minister. We had Chloe Schwabrick. We had Debbie Nwerere-Paka, who was there from Te Pāti Māori, all together united against the war in Gaza and asking our coalition government, why aren't you? What are you doing? So in this in that sense, Palestine, oh yeah, sorry, yes.
Did the coalition government answer
No.
that question? No.
No, in fact, they've actually blocked us. So the community groups and Palestinians, we've been trying to talk to the coalition now for months and months and months. And it's really frustrating to see our Prime Minister attend the Christchurch massacres in Christchurch. Lovely photo opportunity, beautiful handshakes, lovely smiles. And yet he has done nothing, nothing to support our Muslim population. He hasn't mentioned at all how important we are as a Palestinian Arab community and how important this rise of anti-Palestinian racism and Islamophobia is affecting our population dramatically. There, he was very quick to designate Hamas as a terrorist organization without at the same time making it clear that that terrorism designation does not extend to our community. And we asked him to do that before he made that announcement and he didn't. And that shows you really where our coalition lies. But in Gaza and in Palestine in particular, you're seeing the culmination of a state that is not a democracy. You're seeing the culmination of a state, which is Israel, that was founded on murder. It was founded on theft. It was founded on massacres in 1948. In fact, the recent Al-Shifa Hospital massacre, of over 450 civilians. There was no Hamas in the hospital. Over 450 civilians. Now, these civilians were getting reports. They had their hands tied behind their backs with cable ties. There were mass rapes of women in front of their families. They were shot point blank. They were burned alive. So you have a situation where a terrorist state is what I call Israel, is founded on the ideology that one people can only live there. And these one people, their lives are worth more than anybody else. And these one people have the civil rights and civil rights under law, but another people who lived there before them and alongside some of them who are Palestinian Jews, and there were beautiful Palestinian Jews. We all live side by side. But the majority of Jews that came across to Israel or Palestine in 1948 are not from that region. They're European. And so we started off in 1948 with this awful ideology that one people were more important than another, and these people could create and use acts of absolute horror and violence against
an indigenous population in order to take the land. And so that's actually continued for 75 years. And you're seeing that play out now in an industrialized way because of the how we've progressed in regards to the weapons that we're using. So the industrialized mass murder of the Palestinians that you're seeing in Gaza is a continuation of our Nakba of 1948, in which I lost members of my family. So for the lives of people like myself, Palestinians, it's horrific. Israel invades every single part of your life, from the moment you wake up to the moment you sleep, and they even interrupt you in your dreams. So I remember once staying with my family in East Jerusalem, and there was a bang on the door very, very early in the morning. And we opened the door, and Israeli officers came in with their machine guns pointing at myself and the young children in the house, and told us that we had 5 minutes to get out. So we got out of the apartment, ran outside, and I've never heard such, it was like a transformer rumbling, you know, those transformer machines. Mm. It was just phenomenal. This creature of a machine came down the road. It was like an earthquake was happening. We were all so confused as to what was going on with these massive claws, and it proceeded to rip the roof off the top of the apartment building that we lived in, smashing all the windows. And then they laughed and they left. And so we had to clamber through the glass and clean it up. And the thing I never got out of my head is I was looking at the bottom floor where we lived, and Oxfam was on the bottom floor, but nothing was said about it. So we also can't move anywhere without being stopped. So there are checkpoints everywhere you move. And these checkpoints are movable. You have the Qalandia checkpoint, which is going out of the West Bank into Jerusalem and into other areas of Palestine. That's a significant checkpoint that is not temporary. So that's a permanent checkpoint. But at any time, Israel decides they can pop checkpoints wherever they like. So we were with my young children in the car waiting at the Qalandia checkpoint to go through. And your waiting time is completely undetermined. You could be there for a whole day. You could be there for 20 minutes. You could be there for 5 hours. During Ramadan, they make sure that you wait for the longest period of time, so you miss the time to be able to have your water and your food on purpose. And while we were there, unfortunately, they had manhandled a mother and a father in a car that was quite a way in front of us. I saw the aftermath. I didn't actually see it happen. But the children had got out of the car to protect their parents, and the Israeli army shot the children in front of the parents. So you have this daily violence that you have no control over. And the scariest thing, as you've seen now, is that the IDF is made up of Israeli civilians. A lot of them, most of them are civilians. They're from the street. So if you think about New Zealanders being conscripted to go into the army, and you think about your neighbors and people down your street suddenly become rapists and become the most horrific terrorists because of the way that they think about Palestinians. We've been called animals by the Israeli prime minister, by the ministers. They see us as being subhuman. They see us as being the greatest threat to the greatest military might on this earth. And we have no army. We're not allowed. For some reason, we're one of the only countries we're not allowed to have an army, and we're not allowed to defend ourselves, because that's what Israel has created, this great PR campaign over the years. So you don't have any rights. You don't know if these IDF soldiers are going to kill you, or if they're going to hurt you, or if they're going to be reasonable, because they are often young, and the younger the Israeli, the more right-wing and extremist they are. 74% of Israelis between the age of 16 and 24 are more right-wing than those in their 60s, and extremist right-wing, who believe that Palestinians should all be massacred. So it's terrifying for us when we come across the IDF, because Israel can't control them. You've just seen the fact that they have killed seven members of a an agency that delivers food. And at the moment, there's an investigation, which is laughable. The US has asked Israel to do their own investigation into this matter. And whether they say it was not targeted and it was a mistake, or whether they say that it was premeditated, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter, because if it wasn't premeditated, that's even more scary. If it was a mistake, that's even more scary, because they are out of control, totally out of control, the officers, what they're doing on the ground. So living in Ramallah with my children, you have a black water tank because you're not allowed a white one. Only Israeli Jews are allowed a white water tank. So the black water tanks, the water dissipates pretty quickly in the sun. And also it's easier to spot for the army when they are bombing you, so they know which areas they want to bomb. We don't decide what food comes in. They decide what food comes in and out. Sometimes the food is contaminated. Actually, a lot of the times it's contaminated, so you get really sick. So you just keep your eye out on the ground when you're going to buy food, because someone will say, well, when we were there, the watermelon was contaminated. We're not quite sure with what, but people got extremely sick. And then they turn the electricity on and off, and the water on and off. So what's happening in Gaza is nothing new to us, except in Gaza, they're doing it to starve and kill a population, a mass population. For us in Ramallah, usually the electricity would go off when the children wanted to sleep in the evening, and it was the hottest nights, so you had no air conditioning. And then they would turn the water off. So I was able to bath my children every 3 days, and maybe that much water in the bath, because we just didn't have enough water. And getting in and out of Palestine is horrific. So whether you're going through the Jordanian crossing, the King Hussein crossing, I went through the King Hussein crossing, and actually it was interesting. There were tourists behind me who were horrified, because they didn't realize, you know, they don't realize how much you're humiliated and how badly you're treated. I went up to the lady and she said, "When was the last time you had your period?" I said, "Excuse me?" She said, "When was the last time you had your period?" I said, "Not sure." And she said, "How many men have you had sex with? How many boyfriends have you had sex with?" So they ask you really unacceptable questions in front of people. And sometimes they make you strip down to your underpants in front of people to strip search you, just to humiliate you because you're Palestinian, in the hopes that you won't come back. And the last time we were there, we were leaving through Tel Aviv. And a lady, an Israeli officer, came up and she looked at my face, and she, because they can recognize if you're Arab Palestinian, and she said, "So where are your parents from?" And I said, "England." And she said, "Where are your grandparents from?" I said, "Russia." And she said, "You get over there." So she gave me a number, which I had to hold, which is very familiar to things that happened in the past. Yeah. And she made me line up in a line with other Palestinians. And we were there for over 5.5, 6 hours. So they made us wait with our young children. Our kids, who were 3 years old and the twins were five, were not allowed to go to the toilet. We weren't allowed to feed them. We weren't allowed water. They unpacked our suitcases, threw everything, including all of my underwear, all over the floor. They unwrapped all the presents that we had. And at the end, they finally escorted us with guns and said, "If you come back here, worse things will happen to you." So it's horrific for Palestinians in Palestine. And so when you hear these reports of what is going on in Gaza, it's come to probably the most horrific, we've never seen the level of destruction and the level of human rights abuses and the level of blatant disregard for international humanitarian law, and international law in particular, that the world, well, not the world, but many of the politicians, including our government, are sitting and watching. And it's actually, yes.
Just to come back to that situation, you talked about how you went to the steps of Parliament. And in a way, that kind of represents the situation across the globe, because there are definite choices being made about which items will be shown and which messages will be shared. I guess my question is, what can we do to force our government to be more open and more willing to make a stand? Because New Zealand often prides itself on its egalitarianism and its humanitarianism, but that is an example of, like Covido said, well, it wasn't reported, we don't know anything about
I
it.
think
How is it that it can't, that it doesn't get out? How is it that we didn't know that that took place?
because the media needs to support us. The media needs to do what it's there for. The Media Council and the broadcasting standards clearly state that any journalist is supposed to give two sides to a story and not be biased about it. And that's actually not happening. In fact, RNZ had the audacity to interview an army personnel, a supposed New Zealander army personnel who was in Gaza, and he was saying the most horrific things about Palestinians and things that were blatantly untrue. And this was presented as fact instead of opinion by Radio New Zealand. Now, if you're going to do that, you need to then interview a Palestinian. And there has been very few interviews. Radio New Zealand were there on the steps, and their article, while it was incredible, because usually they don't report on things that we do. So thank you. We're really grateful that you were there and that you actually, reported on this. It certainly didn't highlight the strong words that came from Phil Twyford. It did not highlight what Chloe and Debbie were saying at all. And it didn't highlight the fact that the community was coming together, as they should, against a grave violation of our humanity. It's a disgusting violation of our humanity. We're happy to sit here, including our government, and say how bad ISIS is for the way they treat women and children and girls. Yet Israel's treatment of women is unparalleled. They are targeting us because we give birth. They are targeting us because we are the glue that keeps that society together. They are shooting pregnant women. They are running them over in tanks. They are raping women and girls and boys. They are killing women and children in their tens of thousands. And yet our government in New Zealand, is silent. And this has never happened before. So we as New Zealanders need to seriously think about who is representing us and what are they actually representing? Because what our government's done is cowering under the bloody coattails of the US and the UK. And in fact, they recently sent personnel to Yemen. And these personnel were looking at targeting. They were there to help those governments configure targets for the war against Yemen. Now, quite plausibly, those bombs that were dropped killed civilians. So our government is complicit. And our government is following the USA and the UK, who are going to court for their complicit actions within genocide. So what is our government thinking? I mean, Erica Stanford, I have no idea where she's coming from or what her why her bias against Palestinians is so strong, because her words for Ukraine were beautiful and were really strong. These people are suffering. We need to save people. She was, before she came into power, she was a TV producer for a reality TV show called Pihar Rescue. And Pihar Rescue is about saving people. But all of a sudden, when it's Palestine, her mouth is closed and she's talking. This is how insulting it is to New Zealanders. She is actually mentioning the words, "We are monitoring a genocide. We are monitoring starvation, forced starvation by Israel. And we're waiting to see." Waiting to see what, Erica? How many people are dying? And also misinformation saying, oh, but we're giving temporary visas and we're giving visitor visas. Well, she's given 174 to Israel and 27 to Palestine. So these visitor visas and temporary visas, you have to have some kind of paperwork to be able to, and money to be able to get them. And then you have your family that is here have to completely be able to pay for you. Well, you've got, she's treating this as though it's any normal situation, but you've got, this place has been over 60%, probably more now, buildings are completely destroyed. People don't have paperwork. Palestinians, we're not allowed passports. There's no such thing. There was a Palestinian passport until 1948. And after 1948, we were forbidden to have our Palestinian passport. It was confiscated, taken away from us. And it still hasn't been reinstated, which is what we'd like. So Erica Stanford's asking Palestinians to bring a passport that doesn't exist and paperwork that doesn't exist when they've lost it all through bombing.
Could a Palestinian apply for an Israeli passport?
No, oh no, not at all. We are second class citizens. We are not allowed the same rights as Israelis in Israel. In fact, Israelis, if they do something wrong, they're governed by a civil law. We're governed by a military law. Israel's the only country in the world that sentences children in a military court without any defense and with a 99% rate of conviction. So it's just horrific. And our government can see this. So they're watching the starvation. They're watching the killings, like the mass murders and the atrocities, and they haven't said anything. So it's actually a real shame for New Zealanders. I think many New Zealanders are very upset with how they're playing this out within such a short period of time. They've done some you know, great damage. So New Zealanders need to look at different news sites. You've got Democracy Now!, you've got Double Down News, Al Jazeera is fantastic, although Israel wants to ban them from being in Israel. And from recently, they said they're going to ban them from mentioning anything and being in Gaza, which actually, if you look at it, is a real problem for Israelis, let alone the rest of the world, because you're starting to ban media from your own country, you are basically a fascist state. You're telling your people you will listen and you will read only what we give you.
Can so you look just at repeat other... those news agencies again.
Yep, Double Down News.
Yeah.
Middle East Eye.
Yeah.
Democracy Now.
Yeah.
Al Jazeera.
See, we have Al Jazeera on our Freeview TV. We see that.
I don't know. I don't watch the TV here. I'm usually watching it online.
it is on the TV.
So right. Tell us about your sources of information are direct from your relations in those areas?
Yes. From your relations, social media, and these news sites that actually give you really what's happening on the ground. And now in the UN. Just listen to the UN. At first, they were trying to cover everything over and pretend that, you know, what got me about our government in particular, following the international governments, is that Winston Peters, Luxon and Seymour, who is a huge, huge Israeli fan, we need some transparency. I would like to see what kind of business ties those three individually have with Israel. That needs to be the conflict of interest that needs to be addressed at this point. I forgot. Sorry, I've just forgotten what I was going on about.
We were talking about news feeds and where you get your information from.
Oh, yeah. So the UN now is starting to come out with real information and condemning Israel for what is happening. So you're starting to see, I mean, Israel's a pathological liar. It's lied all of its life since 1948. And if anybody thinks that Israel's not lying or hasn't discovered their lies over these last 6 months, and really they've got their head stuck in the sand or they've got no humanity left. So usually what I say to people is listen to what Israel says and then double it back, because it's usually about itself. So if it says that someone's doing this, 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 and this, it usually means that it's actually doing this, 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 and this. And then in the news, it will come out a bit later that it's been doing blah, 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 blah. But those news sources are covering what our media is not, and what our government is not saying, because it's not telling, it's not stand, you know, why haven't you expelled the Israeli ambassador? Everyone says, oh, but that's a really big thing to do. Well, it's a really big thing to kill tens of thousands of people and forcibly starve them. It's a really big thing to bomb hospitals, to bomb schools.
If, you know, if the planet was a city and countries were shops, you know, we are just a little tiny four square shop on the corner of a block. And, you know, one of the things that really bugs me is that I don't think Christopher Luxon goes home to his children and thinks, I've done a good job today denying what's going on. But there's a game being played on a global scale, and you've alluded to it already, the fact that we have established ties with the United States and Britain. You know, we try to cozy up as part of security arrangements. We want our cake and eat it too. We don't want to be nuclear, but we want to have the same protections that that affords other countries. We want intelligence, but at the same time, we want to be an independent democratic nation. And yet, we won't be brave enough to, like you say, expect, you know, there are ways to do things. And our government, I get the impression that they're hogtied. As much as they might want to do something, they know they can't upset their trade partners. And, you know, it's like, you know, treading carefully with China.
But they can. They can. I mean, this is such an old story. New Zealand doesn't need to be tied with Five Eyes. Doesn't need to be tied with the US. In fact, it shouldn't be at this stage because they're going down.
That's what I'm saying. That there's this kind of like myth, if you like, that if we stand on our own, we're going to suffer.
But you don't need to stand on your own. Why don't you stand with other Scandinavian countries?
Yeah.
Why doesn't New Zealand start looking at new partnerships? It needs to. And that's why this government may not be the right government, because it really hasn't got a clue about how to look outside the box. And its focus is money and power.
Yeah.
And that's it, above humanity. And that's our real problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to ask you a different question, because I understand you lived in Egypt. And one of the questions in my mind is, you would think actually that the other countries around Palestine who are Arab countries would be somehow supporting Palestine, but they seem to be, I'm not sure if they are, I mean, apart possibly from Iran indirectly, but there doesn't seem to be much support for them. And I'm wondering why that is, and what it was like living in Egypt. What's the political situation there?
Look, the Arab countries have let us down since 1948. And that the reason being, it's not the people. You'll see that there's a huge groundswell and huge support from the people. It's because there's of corruption. It's because a lot of these people in power, I feel, are not the right people in power. And they're doing and making moves behind closed doors, all for financial personal gain. And so a lot of the corruption in the Middle East is the major reason why the Middle East won't unite as one force. The stupid thing is, and most people in the Middle East realize this, if we all united as one, Israel hasn't got a hope in hell. The West have not got a hope in hell, but they're not. And I think it's a strategic thing that you go in and you offer all these incentives to the particular leaders at the time. And then they offer all those financial incentives to their military leaders. And everyone's really comfortable making millions and millions of dollars at the expense of their own people, which is why you'll see in many countries, you know, the education system is shot. The health system is shot. People are living hand to mouth. And yet you've got these leaders who have got so much money in their pocket. And, you know, some of the Western countries are responsible for that as well. And the Western countries will come in and as they're doing in Palestine. Part of the reason that Israel wants Gaza is not just because it's a land grab and theft and it's a supremacist ideology, which it is. And we have to be clear about that with what Israel is doing with this ethnic cleansing. But there are gas and oil resources outside of Gaza. In fact, Israel already steals so much of our resources in the West Bank and sells it under the name of Israel. Now, that's one thing our government could be doing. Why isn't it actively looking at the products coming in from occupied West Bank and East Jerusalem and occupied Gaza, and making sure none of those reach our shores in New Zealand? Why isn't our government looking at economic sanctions? Why isn't our government doing anything with any diplomatic sanctions? It's disgraceful. Like, we don't want another US here in New Zealand. Yeah. We want an independent, morally led government that can stand on its own, that we can look at with pride, and that puts humanity and international law first. And that's one thing that I would like to investigate more, is the fact that our government has not been fulfilling its obligations under international law. If, you know, you've got these obligations, erga omnes, you know, jus cogens. New Zealand's a signatory to the Universal Jurisdiction Paper.
Yeah.
Well, you have an obligation above your foreign policy. I don't care what your foreign policy is, that is trumped by your obligations under international law. That is trumped by the new recent International Court of Justice resolutions. And you're ignoring that at the moment, at your peril, if I might add. But yes, it's, yeah. So that's why, sorry, in a roundabout way, is it's money and it's greed and it's power in the Middle East, why they're not standing by.
And are they afraid, too, that if something did happen, that America would then come in militarily?
Of course. I mean, look, at they're trying. America and Israel are trying to poke and provoke Syria and Iran and Iraq. They're provoking everybody. I mean, they've just bombed. Since when do you bomb a diplomatic mission? And this is what I don't get about what the governments are doing. Since when are you allowed to... Wellington Hospital... They bomb the Wellington Hospital, they go into the Wellington Hospital and they point blank execute those people that can't move. They give a red band to those people who can't move and a green band to those people who can move and say, these are your safe zones. If you don't have this band, you'll be shot. And so they leave and they execute them all. They rape them all in the hospital in front of their families. They tie them up. They kill medical workers. They're killing journalists. They're killing UN workers. They're bombing schools. They're bombing sanitation plants. Everything is, anything that you could do against international law, Israel has done. And yet nothing is happening. And this is why it is so frustrating, and why I do believe you will see growing numbers of people who will take to the streets and who won't stop. I mean, the BDS, the Boycott, Divestment, Sanction campaign is exceptionally important. And when you ask, what can New Zealanders do? Boycott. So recently there was a report saying that McDonald's has lost a massive amount of money because of the boycotting of McDonald's, who support the IDF. The same with Kentucky Fried Chicken, the same with Starbucks, the same with Domino's, the same with Dove Soap, Persil, you name it. Just have a look. They've got some really good apps called No Thanks. Is a really good app. So New Zealanders, what you can do is support New Zealand. Support New Zealand businesses. When you go to your supermarket shop, have a look. As you know, Coca-Cola has been one of those that have been targeted. There are so many others, Obella, Hummus. Go into the supermarket and you'll be shocked at how far Israel's got its tentacles into everything. And it's, you know, people say, oh, but it's you know, it can be a bit uncomfortable to then think, well, what am I going to choose instead of this brand that I already buy? But it's not just Palestinian rights that are being eroded. It's yours. It's yours, because we have just crossed this red line that says that you don't matter anymore, that international law doesn't matter anymore, that women can be treated in such a way, and thinking that New Zealand is so far away is kind of problematic. The reason we are so far away and we are isolated is a problem, because I don't think anyone's going to be coming to our aid in a great hurry if any of the other big countries decide, well, there's no red line now, so they're doing that to that country, we'll come in and do it to that one.
Is there, I don't know the answer to this, so just asking a question, like the border with Egypt, is there a border with Egypt which goes from Gaza?
Yes, the Rafah crossing.
And is that controlled by Egypt or is that controlled by Israel?
It's controlled by Egypt, but it's controlled by Israel because Egypt is controlled by Israel.
So, you know, like you think, well, people would be able to go out through that crossing to Egypt, but Egypt is stopping it.
No, so Egypt's got this company called Hala. So this travel company that before the war, they were charging around $695 for a travel permit to leave Gaza and go into Egypt. Right. Now they are charging, Egyptian Hala is charging $10,000, between $5,000 and $10,000 per person to leave. So Gazans, we don't have that type of money. So that's why you'll see all these fundraising
Yeah.
pages coming up, because for a family, you're looking at $70,000, $80,000 for them just to leave.
Could still do that if you had the money, you would actually be allowed to leave.
This is the problem now. So when they're getting to the border, they've got the paperwork, they've paid the money. What Israel's doing is saying, yep, you can go mum, you can go one child, you can go granddad. Sorry, dad. Sorry, son. We're not going to let you go. What's your decision, family? Do half of you go, or do you and leave your loved ones behind?
So Israel is controlling you at the border.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, and then sometimes what's been happening is that some of the Egyptian side is charging money on top of that. So they're bribing people on top of that. You've got your money, give us more. So that it's a money racket.
Yeah,
it's disgusting in the face of this. It's absolutely, you know, horrific. And we don't have that diplomatic strength and support. Erica Stamper's not giving it to Palestinians. So there used to be the embassy that at the border crossing that would take Palestinians into Cairo, knowing, by the way, that any plane ride that we take to get back to New Zealand, we have to pay back. We've got 3 years. The government's given us 3 years to pay it back. So the government will buy your ticket if you don't have any money because you've lost everything and half your family is dead. But you have to pay it back within 3 years. And somehow you've got to find a job in New Zealand. When you get here on a visitor or temporary visa, there is no help for you whatsoever. So we've had a family who were New Zealand citizens, residents of New Zealand, and they decided to go back and live in Gaza for a short period of time. Well, actually for a long period, it's about 9 years, I think. And their 8-year-old daughter was born in Gaza, and she didn't get her New Zealand citizenship yet. So when the bombing happened, the one of the sons, 16-year-old son, saw his five friends being blown up in the apartment next to them. And they nearly lost their lives. So they basically grabbed what they could and they ran, because when you see how big these 200-pound bombs are and you see them coming down, you know, if you survive that, good luck. So when they contacted our immigration office, they were told, well, you can't leave until you pay $3,600 for your daughter to get her permit. And he's like, what are you talking about? There's no banks. There's no money. I can't wire. There's no internet. Well, we're not going to give it to you until you do that. So it took him about 64 days, but he managed to do that. When they picked him up, because he was a resident, they dropped him at this most unsavory hotel in Cairo that had steps and steps going up. And these people are malnutritioned. Some of them are injured. They are horrifically traumatized. And they were told, but you've got to be out. 3 o'clock in the morning, they dropped them out. And New Zealand immigration said, but you've got to be out by 11 a.m. the next day and you're on your own. So they've got to New Zealand. There's no work. There's no housing. There's no money. There's no food. There's no clothing. There is nothing. So the immigration is treating them all as though they were people coming from a normal country from overseas. And then here we've got Palestinians ringing up Erica Stanford's wonderfully run immigration office, and they're being told, oh, but we don't deal with consular issues, by officers on the phone. And then one officer said, what's going on in Gaza in Israel? And so the Palestinian in New Zealand had to school them for 15 minutes about what is happening in Palestine and Israel before he put him onto a superior for help. It's a shambles. It's a shambles.
Right. Katrina, I'm just mindful of your very precious time.
Oh, yes.
And I'm thinking, I hear you move in magical circles. And I was wondering what your wish for humanity is, and what if you could wave a magic wand, what sort of world would you create?
Oh, gosh. I would love to create a world where we had moral leadership in the world, where people would be curious about other cultures and open to other cultures, where religion was as it was supposed to be, about believing in something that you've chosen but don't expect other people to believe in. To respect humanity, to respect the earth and the animals, and to enjoy living on this earth in peace.
Well, may that be so. Listen, Katrina Mitchell-Kitab, thank you so much for your generous time today. We send much araha to you and your family, particularly your relations in Gaza and the Middle East. And we wish you well. May you be well, may you be happy, and may you live with ease.
Shukran Iktir. Thank you both so much. It's been such a pleasure talking to you both. And I hope you enjoy your day. And please continue your amazing work and your interviews. It's very, very much appreciated. And from our community, we thank you wholeheartedly for your respect and for your humanity and for your curiosity.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Take a lot of